E-I-E-I-O, look who's buying up America's farmland. I'll tell you about it today on Hightower Radio.
Only on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, immediately followed by Eco Radio KC. But first, these messages.
90.1 FM presents Truck Stop Honeymoon, Cowgirls Train Set, and Carswell and Hope, Saturday, November 22nd at 7 p.m., live from Lawrence Arts Center, downtown Lawrence, Kansas. An eclectic night of bluegrass, country, and pop, culminating in a song with all the bands involved. That's Truck Stop Honeymoon, Cowgirls Train Set, and Carswell and Hope, Saturday, November 22nd at 7 p.m. at the Lawrence Arts Center. $13 advance tickets at Love Garden Sounds at 822 Massachusetts, Lawrence, Kansas. Or online at kkfi.org/events.
This week we're living deep in the blues, from the Delta Piano Blues of Eden Brent to the gut bucket guitar of Little Freddie King, and conversation with Chicago legend Buddy Guy and blues humanist Bill Ferris, plus a stop at Teddy's Juke Joint. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Wednesday evening at 7:30.
We know from the childhood song that Old MacDonald had a farm. But E-I-E-I-O, look who's got his farm now. It's groups like American Farmland, Farmland Partners, and BlackRock. These aren't dirt farmers wearing overalls and brogans, but Wall Street hucksters in Armani suits and Gucci loafers. The latest fast buck fad for high roller investment trusts, hedge funds, and venture capital speculators is, quote, farming. Not that these dude ranch dandies are actually plowing and planting. No, these are soft hands people, buying up farmlands with billions of rich investors' dollars, then tilling the tax laws and threshing the farmers who do the real cultivation. For example, American Farmland Company, which owns 16 farms, is a combine of the largest real estate empire in New York City, two Florida sugar barons, a wealth management outfit, and the real estate brokerage arm of insurance giant Prudential. None of these nouveau sodbusters has a speck of dirt under their fingernails, but they figured out how to work the land without touching it and still harvest a sweet profit. The founder of this scheme says it's like gold, but better, because there is this cash flow. Cash flow? Yes, farmers are charged rent to till the Wall Streeters' land. Then the financiers get a prime cut of any profits from the crops that the farmers produce. Also, the combine is set up as a real estate investment trust, providing an enormous tax break for the Wall Street plowboys. And, of course, there's the mega pay the money the lease will reap when they convert their scheme into securities for sale on the stock exchange. This is Jim Hightower saying, a few rich speculators get richer, farmers are turned into sharecrop laborers, and the farms are switched to high-profit crops that require heavy pesticide dosages and soak up scarce water resources. Other than that, this is one hell of a deal.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet. Good evening and welcome to Eco Radio KC. I'm Mike Murphy, filling in for Natural E tonight. On tonight's program, Richard Mabian welcomes back Jack Pastora, legislative lobbyist for the Kansas Sierra Club, and we'll have a lot to hear about what's going on in Kansas. But first, some news for you. According to Democracy Now!, in Texas, federal investigators have launched a probe after a toxic chemical leak killed four workers at a DuPont plant. The workers were killed by a leak of methyl mercaptan, which is used for making insecticides. Plant manager Randall Clements said the cause is unknown. According to Clements, it's with deep regret that I'm here today to inform you today we lost four of our family members from the LaPorte site. We had the incident this morning that resulted in the exposure of five employees, four of which were fatally exposed, The fifth is in the hospital, expected to make a full recovery. He's merely there for observations. We will continue to cooperate with all the local authorities and make sure that we investigate this fully, and we will find the cause. Also, according to Democracy Now!, House lawmakers have passed legislation to approve the Keystone XL pipeline, which would bring carbon-intensive tar sands oil from Alberta, Canada, to the Texas Gulf Coast. The Senate is expected to vote on the pipeline this week, and there's a lot of the timing of that. A lot has to do with the runoff election in Louisiana, in which the incumbent senator, Democrat, is a co-sponsor along with the congressperson who was the challenger in that. So that's where that's coming from. Do stay tuned to see where that goes. It may involve maybe Joe Biden making a tiebreaker vote or Barack Obama perhaps vetoing, who knows. But do stay tuned for that all-important issue. Also, Democracy Now! Reported that an empty oil train derailed in Castleton, which is the site of the previous crash in North Dakota. Another crude oil train has derailed in Castleton, North Dakota. The town was the site of a prior derailment in December when a train carrying volatile oil from the Bakken Shale caught fire, prompting the evacuation of half the town. This time, the oil cars were empty, so there was no explosion. And the church group / street performance group Reverend Billy and the Stop Shopping Choir for an organic are having a Thanksgiving meal on the lawn of Monsanto World Headquarters on Thanksgiving Day. They say, bring your friends, family, and a dish to share. Children are welcome. The group's website includes Google Map directions as well and plans to host the event from 1 to 3 at the St. Louis location. The Stop Shopping Choir calls itself a radical performance community based in New York City with 50 performing members and a congregation in the thousands. They work to promote earth justice and tackle several different topics ranging from the destruction caused by BP oil to the ongoing problem of the disappearing honeybees. Their leader, Reverend Billy, has been outspoken against many corporations ranging from Starbucks to Monsanto. He also has a message for anyone who can't attend the Thanksgiving meal. See more at althealthworks.com. And speaking of Starbucks, Neil Young is seeking a new source for his daily latte. The rocker announced on his website that he's urging his fans and as well as himself a boycott for Starbucks over the company's involvement in a lawsuit against the state of Vermont's new requirements to label genetically modified ingredients. I used to line up, this according to Rolling Stone, I used to line up and get my latte every day, but yesterday was my last one, according to Neil. Starbucks has teamed up with Monsanto to sue Vermont and stop accurate food labeling. Vermont passed a law last spring requiring all food products containing GMOs to be labeled as such by July 1st of 2016, with the exception of dairy products, meat, alcohol, and foods served in restaurants. Shortly after, four food industry organizations filed a lawsuit challenging the law's constitutionality. Among the plaintiffs is the Grocery Manufacturers Association, whose more than 300 members include both Starbucks and Monsanto. The other three plaintiffs are Snack Food Association, the International Dairy Food Association, and the National Association of Manufacturers. Monsanto might not care what we think, but as a public-facing company, Starbucks does, Young wrote. If we can generate enough attention, we can push Starbucks to withdraw its support for the lawsuit and then pressure other companies to do the same. Considering that Starbucks has been progressive on LGBT and labor issues in the past, it's disappointing that it is working with the biggest villain of them all, Monsanto, said Neil Young. And the Department of Energy has issued a press release announcing that CenterPoint Properties Trust has been begun conducting extensive site analysis and environmental review to facilitate the disposition of the Bannister Federal Complex. This is a significant step in fulfilling the disposition policy set forth in NNSA Administrator Frank Klotz's recent report to Congress, said Mark Holchek, NNSA Kansas City Field Office Manager. The public-private partnership with CenterPoint is the most efficient and effective path forward as we work together to redevelop the Bannister Federal Complex in an environmentally responsible manner and return it to productive use for the citizens of Kansas City. This work represents the next milestone in a multi-phase process that NNSA initiated in 2011. In 2012, NNSA selected CenterPoint Properties as their preferred partner. For more than 70 years, the Bannister Federal Complex, over 300 acres located in South Kansas City, has been a major employer and served the nation in supporting of national security and business administrative services. There is no word on the cleanup of how the cleanup will be administered at this old plant, while the new plant is already in business at 150 Highway and Botts Road. And now that's all for the news. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Richard Mabian.
Thank you there, Mike. You did an outstanding job.
Well, I'm no natural E, but...
I know you're not a natural E, but you pulled it off real well. Naturally, we miss you. Just want you to know we hope you get well. We know how it is when you have to sit back and get well. So take care of yourself and relax and enjoy it.
Hello, everyone. Richard Mabian here. Glad to be back with you.
I was here with you last week and got a great show going for you this week. Last week, we had the the president of the Kansas City, Missouri Sierra Club. And I, from what I gather, he's also a board member for their state Sierra Club. And this week, we have our old friend Zach from the Kansas Sierra Club, who spends his time as our legislative warrior up in Topeka. So after I get through with a couple of announcements here, then we're going to jump right in here with Zach. He and I, we really enjoy our time together, and he's been real busy, so you'll get a chance to hear what's going on. This is another one of those calls, another one of those sessions where you can call in because we'll be hitting a few topics that you may want to address. So just jump in there, give us a call, 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. You know, one of the things that I do is try to push the education aspect and talk about why we need to educate each other. Because if we don't educate each other, no one else is going to take the time to do it. I want you to know that I found out, I guess I can say this because I found it out in a meeting, that when the fella had Ebola in Dallas, that his waste, I heard that it could be anywhere from 12 to 20 bags of waste a day. Well, I just found out in a meeting that waste was transported to the Kansas City metropolitan area daily, to the medical waste facility that's in Fairfax.
I had no idea.
No one knew this. I found out about it in a meeting. That's why I'm sitting here telling you now. And, of course, you know my red flags went up because no one told us that. This is back at a time when nobody knew what we were dealing with or what it was going to cause or how was it transferred or transmitted. This was back during the early days. It was coming to Kansas City. And I just had him, and not knowing right now, I can't tell you how he got here, but I know it didn't come by train because, well, I guess it didn't come by Burlington Northern Santa Fe. I mean, it could have came on another train from down in Texas, but it didn't come on Burlington Northern because I just had we had our intermodal meeting with them about our concern with the diesel emissions in the Argentine and Turner District this past week, and one day I hope to be able to come in and bring you up to date on how that meeting went. It was very interesting for us to be there. We had some really good points to make. Our own Judy Ansel from here at the station was at that meeting with us. So, you know, we had a really sharp group sitting around the table. So it went real well. But I even asked them, because he was saying as a public transportation, they are obligated to carry toxic material. It's not like they can say no. As soon as he brought that up, immediately I asked him about that Ebola. Were they the ones that brought it to town? And he said no. But I just wanted you to be aware of that. And I talked to a guy from the Unified Government about this, and I told him that I was outraged that no one told us. And then he answered the question and said that back in 2005, when they had a public hearing on that medical waste facility being located in Fairfax, nobody showed up and said anything. Well, heck, nobody knew Ebola was going to be around then.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was utterly ridiculous that he gave me that answer, that nobody came to the public hearing. Now that we know this is going on, you would think they would do it. I just want to pass that along and let you know that we're still learning. Also, last Tuesday, it became official for me being elected as the president of the Kansas City, Kansas NAACP. I told Zach, who was our guest here tonight, last year I was elected as the Achiever of the Year for the Sierra Club, and then I come back next year and I get elected president of the NAACP. And two of the groups at the Sierra Club have been, two of the groups in this country that's been trying to figure out a way to bridge a gap between them has been the Sierra Club and the NAACP. So I am the gap, y'all. I'm telling you right now, I am the gap. And we're going to figure out a way to bridge me. So just stay tuned. And stay tuned. You'll be aware of it. I ran on an environmental ticket. I think I may have said something about that last week. Also, I last week had a chance to be on a panel with a chapter of the NAACP over at UMKC. And it was a group of young people. I mean, it was a fantastic group of young people. I, of course, was the oldest thing in the room. I'm always that way, it seems now. But the panel was on the Michael Brown case. And this was a different kind of panel. This wasn't your, I'm mad what the police do. I mean, we had a couple of folks in there like that. But it wasn't about that. This was more about where do we go from here? You know, and I'm really letting you know that as a person who was a Easy Rider hippie and lived through 1968, I had a chance to explain to them that the Michael Brown case in Ferguson was their 1968 to those of us who thought we had figured out a way to overcome in this country. And what happened to Michael Brown is what happened to us at that Democratic National Convention up there in Chicago, where the system just opened up and allowed the authority to do what the heck they wanted to do, and without any kind of circumstances or concern for people, when they beat women with clubs and had dogs biting people and the whole bit. It was a wake-up call for that hippie movement, that black movement. It was a wake-up call. And this thing with Michael Brown for this now generation is a wake-up call. Of course, I'm not a protester. I believe protests went out with blue suede shoes. I think that people know how to deal with protests. But I think this is a time for people to get deep within themselves and become a better fashioned group of folks. And one thing different between what happened to us in 68 and what's going on with this now generation is much more integrated than we were. What they need is what we had back there, is how to organize in a positive manner to accomplish something, not organize for overthrow and destruction. All right, you got my sermon for the day.
Okay, before we bring Zach in, why don't we take our first break?
Okay, we take a break. Look at, I talked up to the break. Here you go.
Hi, I'm Matthew Fox, and I'm author of the book Meister Eckhart, A Mystic Warrior for Our Times. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about how all of us are called to be mystic warriors in our time.
New Dimensions airs at 5 a.m. on Tuesdays.
This week, it's the next edition of our God and Government series. This time we travel to Thailand, where the new military government holds a tight grip on the Buddhist monkhood.
Things that in the past people weren't thinking so much about, like these problems in the Buddhist order, start to get magnified because they're part of a phenomenon that I call national anxiety.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before the Jazz Disciple.
Ari Berman of The Nation recently wrote that it's become easier to buy an election and harder to vote in one. He'll explain on Counterspin, Tuesday evening at 6:30.
Okay, I'm back. Right before I bring Zach on, I want to leave this with you. We just had the latest Ebola case die this morning, last night, in Nebraska. It makes you wonder, did they bring his waste here too? Probably. I would not be a bit surprised. Okay, Zach, welcome, brother.
Hey, good to be with you.
It's good.
Always a pleasure.
Oh, yeah, it's good to see you. Especially after my little introduction, we need something to fire us up now. you've been out of town.
Yes,
let's
I have.
Talk, let's talk about it.
Yeah, I just got back from West Virginia, of all places.
Okay.
You ever been there?
Just going through, going to D.C.
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
Sure, yeah. We landed in D.C. and then went about an hour and a half, southeast, and ended up near Shepherdstown, near Harper's Ferry.
How was it?
It was awesome. It was beautiful. I'd never been in that part of the country, and it was really nice. I was there for a Sierra Club rendezvous get-together with all the different lobbyists from each state. And that was pretty special.
Was.
So
you met these people before?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. It's always a good time, always educational, and good to see that we have all these different leaders working in their own respective state on environmental initiatives.
So what's hot?
Well, we talked a lot about all sorts of different things. We talked about the EPA's Clean Power Plan. We talked about water pollution and nutrient pollution we're seeing from our farms. We talked about that Keystone Pipeline that we talked about earlier in the show, a vote coming up this week. My sources think as early as tomorrow we might have a vote in the Senate. So.
All right, well, let's lay us out on the agenda. We'll start with the Keystone Pipeline, and okay. Then where you want to go. What's next?
Sure. We'll talk about the Keystone Pipeline since it's in the news, and then we'll go maybe to talk about what's happening in Kansas as far as the water plan.
Okay.
Governor just released a water plan, so that's pretty exciting. We'll talk about that. And then also EPA came out with their Clean Power Plan to try and reduce carbon dioxide emissions down from 30% by 2030. From 2005 levels, so we can talk a little bit about that at the end too. Okay, so Keystone Pipeline, as it was said, the House passed it last Friday, and they're expecting the Senate to take up the issue as early as possible. And you know, Richard, the Republicans up in D.C. have been talking about this for a long time,
yep.
Wanted to get that pipeline passed. And as you know, our little section in Kansas is already built. You know, it's a done deal for us. And with that, we actually gave them tax-free. Canadian company TransCanada, who's building the pipeline, got a tax-free abatement in Kansas. So we're not even, as far as I know, making too much money off the deal. Yeah. So that's pretty interesting to think about. But, you know, of course, we're talking about the tar sands.
Yeah.
And you know anything about the tar sands as far as how dirty it is compared to regular sweet crude? It's 3 to 5 times more carbon intensive than the oil we get here domestically in the U.S.
Well, but if I'm not mistaken, that oil's not even for us. It's just passing through us. Is that right?
That's correct.
It's going to be refined in Texas and go to China. Is that correct?
Right. So yeah, Port Arthur, Texas is where it ends up. It's a 800-some-mile pipeline, 875 miles, if I'm right, from Alberta, Canada, to Houston, to Port Arthur, Texas. And you're right. We have plenty of oil. We're seeing more oil and gas up in North Dakota and in other parts of the country. So it's not really for us. It's to export it.
They're just using it.
Right.
The problem here is that if one of those lines was to break or something like that, people, that's the issue environmentally of what it could do as far as that tar sand getting into our drinking water. And that's what it has really helped people really fit to be tied that they're going to go ahead and build this. But I do know for a fact that I was at a session out with the Black Chamber of Commerce in Kansas City, Kansas, out at Kansas City, Kansas Community College Trade Program, and they have been graduate folks from there with a job placement on that pipeline being built. They've been leaving here, going up there, receiving employment on that pipeline. So the one thing I noticed when it first came out, it was 20,000 job, possible job. Now it's up to 50.
Yeah, 42,000, I think, is the estimate by the State Department.
That is unreal. And those jobs are just, I mean, the thing that gets me about the whole environmental industry, as far as I'm concerned, like you talk about a windmill, they'll go, well, it'll create 500 jobs to build a windmill, but it only takes 50 people to run it. So what happens to them other 450 folks that was employed? The same thing here. We're talking about hiring 42,000 people to build this, dig the holes, lay the pipes, and that kind of stuff. Then once it's completed, a large portion of those people will be out of work. Is that correct?
Right. And that's what we say, is that these aren't sustainable jobs. You know, we're talking about this one pipeline, and there's a few dozen pipelines that are proposed for construction for these tar sands. So that's one thing. But their own analysis, the State Department's analysis, shows that over a span of 2 years, that's 3,900 construction jobs and only 35 permanent jobs.
35
permanent jobs, yes. So
35. That is unreal.
And we're talking about something, some tar sands that are 3 to 5 times more carbon intensive, that passes over thousands of water bodies, including 56 perennial rivers and lakes. And you know about the Keystone. So this is the Keystone XL pipeline. They already have the Keystone 1.
Right.
You can guess how many spills they had in their first year of operation.
What?
1 dozen in the first year.
Boy.
And according to the Department of Transportation's Pipeline Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, the one that oversees pipelines across the state, they've had 1,300 serious pipeline incidents in the last 5 years.
I still say, folks, we have to really, really educate ourselves. It's obvious that the leadership that we have before us is not really concerned about our well-being. They're strictly concerned about the bottom line of making that money. That's what we have become, unfortunately. And like, it's one of those situations that getting mad is not going to make any difference until we have an informed electorate. There's nothing that's going to happen. We'll keep putting these same people back in.
That's a good point, Richard. Yeah. You know, we're about it was about a week ago or so. Let's see.
Yeah,
it was a couple of weeks ago. We had our big election.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And.
Yeah.
And it was surprising, in Kansas, there were more people that did not vote than did.
Yeah.
I think our turnout was somewhere like 48%, and that's just amazing. We got over, so half of that 40%, you know, elected our new officials, or some of the, and mostly in Kansas, the same officials we've been having, right? But we had even a bigger majority that didn't even weigh in on the subject. And in my mind, until we get that number higher, until
right.
we get the numbers up in like the 70% or 80% people weighing in on this, I don't think we're going to have the tremendous, the kind of radical, in a good sense, the radical shifts that we need to really care for,
well,
you know, environmental initiatives, all sorts of initiatives that we need some desperate help on.
I think there's a need for negotiation, a serious negotiation, not political negotiation, but serious negotiation about people and their welfare, because that was one of the issues with this particular event, the pipeline, because you had unions, and we got many union brothers and sisters out there who I truly love that could see a benefit from the pipeline being built. Okay, we can't take that away. Those are union jobs that you talked about. Regardless of how long they last, they still union jobs. And everybody's hurting right now and needs to work. But then again, you come back and you got your environmental community. And the environmental community, it was probably one of the most strained decisions that had to be made that this country's had in a long time, since probably back with civil rights. That someone, we got a caller. Caller, you on the line. Would you give me your first name and the part of the city you're calling from, please?
This is Blind Guy calling from the Bill Incognito in Midtown.
How you doing there, Blind Guy?
Fabulous. Hey, Richard, give my number to that guy guest last week so we can talk about some of the things in Independence and the power plant downtown. Now, you left out a big bunch of jobs that will be created by the XL Keystone Pipeline. When they start refining that, what comes out of the stack and prevailing winds bringing it north-northeast, you know, from the Rockies on to the eastern shore, you'll have a lot of respiratory therapists, people delivering oxygen, extra people working in emergency rooms when their asthma and breathing problems kick up. So, you know, we're probably looking at, because they've got to be 24-7 as far as some of the
operation
elements
yeah.
that'll crop up.
Right.
We could have an additional 50,000 people just working in respiratory alone. And those would be good paying jobs.
Well, thank you, Brian. Yeah, I agree with you. You know, there's always a ray of sunshine, I guess you could say, even out of the negatives.
Yeah,
you know,
people are gasping for air. They'll say, at least we got our CC XL pipeline.
Yeah.
We can send oil to China.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Brother Parker. Thank you, Brian. I appreciate your call. What about that?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, one thing we like to talk about is more than just the economic bottom line. You know, we also got to consider the health impacts,
right.
the health of our ecosystems and habitat, and absolutely right. What are we talking about when we talk about trying to pursue the best quality of life for people?
Right.
And that goes beyond just having a job, you know, and trying to get people jobs. It's having clean air, clean water, clean soil, and a right to a safe environment. So
yeah, it all boils down to education. I'm going to take another break here to get our second one in, and then we'll be right back. Thank you.
This can sound overwhelming. Anything about climate change can sound overwhelming, and it's certainly easier to talk about changing light bulbs than changing the economy. But here's what we need to remember. It's not like we're talking about an economy that is working beautifully except for the small matter of rising sea levels.
That's Naomi Klein on the next Alternative Radio, Wednesday morning at 9.
Popular opinions of presidential history, such as Lincoln was superb, Pierce was disastrous, hold up to scrutiny. Other perceptions don't hold up so well. Did Reagan really end the Cold War? Was Obamacare rammed through without Congress reading it? There's some surprising answers to these questions. Professor Max Skidmore, who's professor of political science at UMKC, will shed light on these and other interesting facts about the U.S. presidents this Wednesday at noon on the All Souls Forum right here on KKFI.
All righty, we're back again. First of all, I'm going to throw out that number once again. It's 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. Zach, you're going to talk a little bit about water. Now, water is a major, and it's one of those areas where I don't really believe that the public is being kept abreast of what's going on. I have talked about it when I host one of these shows, and I try to make people understand that water is starting to be a very sought-after commodity. And there's a lot of underhanded things that could go on if the public doesn't get on top of it and stay on top of it. We'll do what we can to keep them abreast. So what's going on with our water? Talk about the
sure.
Government.
Yeah, I agree, Richard. You know, in Kansas, probably the number one environmental issue, almost maybe neck and neck with ongoing climate change with the country and the rest of the world. But here in Kansas specifically, the water is the chief issue. And, you know, we're talking about mainly the Ogallala Aquifer out there in western Kansas. Some of these communities have less than 20 years of water left.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 26 years old, Richard,
yeah.
So I know what that means, 20 years, you know. That's
I don't know if people do. We say that, but I don't know if people really understand what we're saying. There won't be any water, folks. I mean, we out.
Right. What do you do?
Yeah.
You know, I
said, I saw something today said it takes 6,000 years for rain and runoff to be able to replenish the water that we've lost. 6,000 years.
Wow.
I don't think any of us within earshot of this radio program got 6,000 years' wait.
And you know, we're just taking it for granted, I think. You know, across the world, some people don't have access to, and by some, I mean many people don't have access to clean, safe drinking water.
Right.
You know, and so we're just very fortunate, but we're using it at a huge amount. We're talking about Ogallala Aquifer has already declined 30% in the last 50 years. And according to the governor's office, the Ogallala will be 70% depleted, and our reservoirs will be 40% filled in the next 50 years if we don't do anything about it. And for some communities, it's going to be way quicker than that.
Yeah.
Parts of Texas are already growing dry.
Yeah.
So, fortunately, our governor and administration has taken some action on it. They've called for a 50-year water vision, and I've been on the show criticizing some of that water vision in the past. But last week, they unveiled their draft 2 of their plan, so I encourage you, just Googled it up today to print it off. You can go to the Google in Kansas Water Office 50-year vision. And go to that page, and just almost after the first paragraph, you can find a click here for that draft. And
Kansas Water.
Yeah, Kansas Water Office.
The
50-year water vision.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's got some good things in it. I haven't read through it completely. Like I said, I just printed it off today. But one thing it does call for is K-12 education.
Yeah.
I know you love education,
yeah.
Richard.
Yeah.
It's about
yeah.
time
yeah.
That we build in water conservation into our curriculum for young people so they can realize how important water is and how we can conserve it into the future. Because ultimately, it's going to be their future that's
right.
directly impacted by this. And
well, that was the thing that impressed me about what they're doing in Kansas City, Missouri with Public Works. Is they're teaching the elementary students about the stormwater drains, because as in 20 years or 10 years, those people are going to be ratepayers, and that's when they're going to get hit with the additional cost they're going to have to pay for the work that's going to have to be done with this $2, $3 billion stormwater problem they got in Kansas City, Missouri. Well, if you don't have an informed voter to ratepayers, then you got everybody pulling out their hair thinking you're doing something slick or just trying to take their money. And that's what's going on here. They need to educate these youngsters about how to conserve water. You know, the whole bit, that's where we need to start. And not because it's some law, because you got somebody sitting up saying you can only have 3 glasses of water a day. I don't know what we're talking about. But they got to have it internally, have internalized why it's necessary for us to become more conservative in what we're doing with our water and stuff.
Right, right. Absolutely. And it's going to take all of us.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's going to take all of us. But it's especially going to take some of those heavy water users out in western Kansas irrigating the corn.
Yeah, I don't know how we're going to get around that. I know it's there. At Kansas Dialogue this year, they were talking about limiting them on how much water they could use. I think he was just saying something there about
right.
a certain percentage.
Right, yeah. So these farmers that are irrigating corn and some parts of those Kansas is in the best place to be, you know, farming corn.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we're taking million-year-old water. Some of that aquifer water has been there for millions of years, right, accumulating. And we're just sucking it up in a matter of, you know, decades.
Okay.
You know, and so, you know, that's one thing this Draft 2 Water Vision calls for is better crop technology, switching crops over. We're talking about not doing corn but doing some other things like going back to wheat. This has kind of been a work in progress. You know, we used to go from not using very much water, and that was good farming, and now we're pouring it on as much as we can to get better yields. So,
all right, caller, here you're on the line. Will you tell us your first name and what part of the city you're calling from, please?
Steve from Overland Park.
Okay, Steve. Some reason you didn't come through very clear. Was there? Okay, you there. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah. Well, one of my concerns with the water is there's, you look at the Middle East, the richer Middle East countries like United Arab Emirates and all that, they're getting really heavy into desalination plants. because they don't have much water over there. And I think that would be a huge future thing for economy to get into. Is, I mean, it's supposed to be rising water levels along the coast with the glacial ice melts and all that. So why not invest in a whole system of desalination plants and make pipelines to carry water to the needed areas?
Okay.
Right.
Zach?
Yeah, that's a good point, Steve. And I would assume that many engineers are looking to develop some of that.
I know that they had talked about pumping water from the Missouri River around White Cloud across the state of Kansas to make up for the water that we're losing in the aquifers. And it was going to be something like a $12 billion project. It was on the governor, it was on the legislators' docket last session. It didn't go anywhere, but it's there, and they're talking about it. It's a major, it would be a major project, but it may be the beginning of what you're talking about, Steve, of trying to figure out a way to move this water around. I heard you just mention that about the rising water that's on the coast, and I don't know. I mean, that made sense when you said that. So maybe that is something that we'll see more of.
So,
if these, you know, these corporations can spend bazillions of dollars on these oil pipelines, I mean, I would hope they could figure out that maybe there'd even be a profit in making desalination plants and building water pipelines. I mean, this only makes sense.
Well, I've been watching some conversations on the Sierra Club listserv today, and even though I didn't get a chance to completely read the article before I left home, they were warning folks out west about that issue that you're talking about, because what's happening, the younger generations are leaving the state. They're going to Denver and Kansas City, and they're leaving their land out there for people who are land speculators who are purchasing the land. Well, some of those folks who are purchasing that land are doing it because they're attempting to get the land rights to that water that's underneath that land. And they want people to start becoming more aware of that fact, because that's what you're just talking about, where they'll figure out a way to make a profit. We're always going to have both sides of it, and there's going to be those that are going to figure out a way to profiteer, that's going to use the system. Then there's going to be those that are going to figure out how they can make money work, and it's going to prove to be a benefit for this country, too.
Well, yeah, they can make money doing a good thing instead of a bad thing. Hey, why not?
I know that's right. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate your call. Keep listening to us, buddy.
That's a good point Steve makes, and I mean, as we go on with some of these environmental issues, we're going to figure out how to adapt and make the best out of kind of a sour situation. But, I mean, if there's things we can do to save the water while we got it,
right,
as opposed to just assuming that there's going to be a magic bullet in the future, I mean, those desalinization plants take a lot of energy. You know, it's going to take a lot of infrastructure.
Right.
Those pipelines.
Say that word again.
Desalinization. That's basically taking the salt out of salt water,
okay,
so we can drink
like
it.
Like a filtering system.
Right. Right.
Okay. You know, I said before that this country is moving. This planet is moving more and more to a negotiating state, where it's going to have to be done in good faith. And not done because of not done because of the way you know, it's being done now from a political stand. You know, either it's the Democrats or the Republicans and the poor Green Party fighting.
Yeah, we're gonna have to get along and figure out some solutions, right?
All
right,
now we're getting short here on our time. We got about another 5 minutes to go. So there was another area you had to mention there.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about the EPA Clean Power Plan.
Yeah.
Now, this is President Obama, you know, has come out with directing the EPA to try to get some sort of handle on our carbon dioxide emissions. Just made a deal with China on reducing carbon dioxide. And this has been one of our latest attempts in trying to reduce carbon dioxide. Now, I know some folks out there are saying, well, carbon dioxide's, I mean, is that a big deal? Either the trees take in or put out carbon dioxide,
mm-hmm,
right? And so, or they take in carbon dioxide, right? And so we put out the carbon dioxide and they take it in. So it's good for the trees. Well, no, when we're putting out as much as we have, you know, we're talking about burning carbon, oil, gas, fossil fuels out of the ground at an unprecedented rate, and putting it up in our atmosphere creates the greenhouse gas effect. And this is just warming the planet up at an unprecedented level, right?
Right.
So we got to get a handle on this. And for a long time we said, well, China and India, some of the growing countries, they're not taking any action on this. Well, this new deal shows that United States 25% of the carbon footprint on the planet. One of the biggest, problems of the climate change issue worldwide. We need to take some initiative and take some responsibility on it. So we've come up with a clean power plan that is, our goal is to reduce 30% of our CO2 emission levels by 2030.
Okay.
So we can talk more about that and wherever you want to go with it.
No, that's good, because that's when I brought this thing in. I got it off the it came through my listserv on Coming Clean, the State of U.S. Renewable Energy, and it taught on that last page. What I did was I went in and I took out the state. I got Iowa and Kansas to compare them. You know, and it asks questions about, well, it's telling you where you are, like Iowa, 62% coal, 25% wind, 8% nuclear. Then they're working on solar and wind. They got question mark by it. And then Kansas is 63% coal, 19% nuclear, 12% wind. And then it also has a question mark on solar and win. And then I got Missouri too, and Missouri is 79% coal, 12% nuclear, 7% gas, and then again solar is the wind. Then I added the two states that they consider to be ahead of the game, and that's Colorado and California. Colorado is 66% coal, 20% gas, 11% wind, solar and wind question mark. And then California is 60% gas, 14% hydro, 9% nuclear, and then again solar and wind. Now, but on that last page, there's one more I put on there, and it was Nebraska, because Nebraska is one of the states that's supposed to be net lagging behind, and they're 73% coal, 17% nuclear, 4% wind. You really can't tell by those figures. The figures is the one you just mentioned. Where do they plan on being in 2030? As far as what? Now, what does that percentage represent?
It represents the amount that how much we're going to
decrease
our carbon dioxide levels from 2005 levels.
Okay, so I reversed it on this last sheet. Starting with Nebraska, they're going to decrease theirs by 11%. California is going to decrease theirs by 21%. Colorado, 23%. Missouri, 3%. Kansas, 20%, and Iowa, 15%. Now, Missouri also had a figure in there for 2015 of reducing it 15%, so totally theirs would be 20. We don't have a lot of time. It's time for us to get off the mic and pick it up, but we will continue. We always run out of time.
Yeah.
You know, we really need to have two shows in a row.
Right.
But you're going to be back with me at least once a month. We got to keep this going and keep people informed. So thanks, Zach, for showing up. Thank you all for tuning in, listening up, and we'll turn it over now to Mike.
Thank you, Richard. I just have a few events coming up in the area. You heard Zach talk about the Clean Power Plan. Well, the Interfaith Power and Light has a conference call arranged with EPA Administrator Carl Brooks, and that's taking place on this Thursday at 1 p.m. And to register for the call, go to kansasipl.org. Also later that day, the Wakarusa chapter of the Kansas Sierra Club will be meeting at 8 p.m. on November 20th at the Lawrence Creates Makerspace. To don't miss an exciting presentation by special guest Dennis Boog Heiberger. And then we've got one other event coming up in Independence this weekend. Let me scroll down to that. It's the Independence Energy Community Forum. For those interested in the Independence area, interested in solar panels, want to reduce your energy bill, concerned about climate change. So on July 21st, the Independence City Council unanimously passed a resolution declaring the City Council's support for renewable electric energy, identifying the City Council's goals regarding renewable energy and providing direction to the City Manager regarding city programs and policies related to renewable electric energy. So this forum is taking place Saturday at the Mid-Continent Public Library. It is at 10 p.m., and it's at 15616 East 24 Highway in Independence, Missouri, to help sort through all this recently passed resolution in Independence. And, of course, there's a lot of great programs coming up on KKFI with regard to environment, not least of which is Naomi Klein talking on climate versus capitalism on alternative radio Wednesday morning at 9, right after Democracy Now. And I think that just about brings us up to speed. We will be back next week. The plan is to be looks like we're going to have folks from Project Censored on. Project Censored publishes a list of underreported stories by the corporate media every year, and it seems like quite a few this year are environmental stories, including the number one underreported story is the increased acidification of the ocean. And so that should be made for an interesting program. That's next week on Eco Radio KC. We're going to have This Week in Water, some issues in water coming up. But first, we've got a couple of messages for you.